we should recognize that this idea of business as a force for good has predated B-Lab by decades. Like, there have been people who have been working on corporate social responsibility, sustainability, triple bottom line businesses for decades. And some of those iconic leaders are part of our community. Companies like Patagonia and Ben & Jerry's and Stonyfield Farms, you know, these businesses have been working to use capitalism for change for decades. That energy has really created an inflection point.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to maximize their impact, because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Borelowitz, founder and CEO of Spring Impact. In recent decades, most businesses have prioritized profits over social or public good. The disconnect between growing a company and making a positive impact made it challenging for businesses to pursue both and do it well. Our next guest, Bart Houlihan, thought differently. Through B-Lab, a nonprofit organization he co-founded in 2006, Bart helped pioneer a movement that is transforming the role of the business community from purely being driven by money to drivers of social change. And it's working. In this episode, we talk about the shift from a shareholder economy to creating real value for stakeholders. Bart and I also discuss the challenge of scaling with integrity and harnessing the power of business as a force for good.
I began my career as an investment banker, and pretty quickly, Dan, realized that though I enjoyed the work, it was too transactional. I was looking for an opportunity that would build relationships. And that's when I got a call from my, believe it or not, my freshman year dorm mate from college, who had just started a small athletic t-shirt company at the time, a company called And One Basketball. And he was looking for somebody to come help operate the business, somebody who would eventually move into the president's role. And believe it or not, I was within a month of starting business school. And in our conversations at a friend's wedding, J. Cone Gilbert, that's his name, talked me out of going back to business school and coming to join, at the time, what was about a $500,000 t-shirt company. And over the course of the next 11 years, we, together with a team of partners and an incredibly talented team, grew that organization to about $250 million in revenues and the second largest basketball brand in the world.
It was Bart's work at And One that led him to B-Lab's founding.
And One was indeed a socially responsible business. Dan, we want to use those terms back then, but it was an organization that we tried to build to be proud of, one that treated our employees like family, that had an ethical supply chain, that was in and of a local community, that was aware of its environmental footprint. And what we learned over our run at And One was that this was not only the right thing to do as business leaders, but a better way to run business. Those commitments to our stakeholders paid for themselves many, many times over the course of our 11-year beautiful run at And One. At the end of our term with And One, when it became time to sell the company, what was interesting was we had invested for a decade plus in putting purpose and mission at the center of the business. But frankly, at the moment of a liquidity opportunity, you have one legal obligation here in the United States, at least, and that is to maximize returns to shareholders. And so all that we had focused on for so many years about mission and purpose couldn't even be discussed at the moment that it mattered most, when our legacy was indeed in question. And though the gentleman who bought the company, I bear him no ill will, but within, I don't know, 6 months, he had fired our entire team, eliminated our ethical supply chain, got rid of all of our charitable giving programs, all of our direct service programs, in all of our environmental efforts.
Oh, God. That must have been tough.
It was rough, man. It was genuinely rough. And it just felt like at the back end of that, that indeed there had to be a better way. There should be a way that a company can scale, raise capital, and even have a liquidity event and still hold on to its mission.
So you had a clear problem founded on real and painful experience. So then how did you translate that into B-Lab's big vision for creating change?
What's really interesting is that our vision morphed in our very first year. And when we began the work, it was really focused on a pretty narrow aperture of building this better way, right? A way that a company can hold on to its purpose. And even in our initial vision statement, we were talking about building a new segment of the economy. And the truth is, we were pretty ignorant. There were already hundreds of thousands of companies that define themselves as sustainable or triple bottom line. And pretty quickly, our aperture broadened, Dan, from trying to build a new segment of the economy to really influencing the entire economic system. And at that juncture, by the end of the first, 12 to 18 months, our focus began to broaden to how do we move all businesses towards a more sustainable future? How do we really harness the power of capitalism to address the world's great challenges? And so what became as this pretty narrow beginning point expanded to an ambition to fundamentally transform the economic system globally.
What I love about that is I spend my whole life talking about scale, and immediately you set your sights, not just at companies, which is tough, but actually on transforming a system and really working for better impact across just globally, vast numbers of firms and in a huge space. But then, of course, you got the challenge of translating that into action. So what happened there? How did you translate that big, audacious vision into action?
Well, our approach to trying to tackle that vision is pretty straightforward, Dan. Like, we believe in the power of leadership. We believe that if you can identify leaders and shine a light on them and tell their story, you can inspire millions of others to follow, to be more like those leaders. After we've settled on this vision of a more inclusive, more equitable, more regenerative economy, we began focusing on trying to highlight leaders and provide tools for others to follow to build a movement of people using business as a force for good. And that leadership set is indeed our community of certified B corporations. They became the bullseye that really manifested that which we were trying to create, right? If we could show to the world that you could make money and make a difference and be more resilient as a business and be successful, that we thought there would be real energy for others to want to try to follow that lead. And so that's been our strategy all along. Build a movement by focusing on leaders and providing tools for others to be more like a certified B corporation.
Some of the listeners may not know, what does it mean to be a certified B corporation?
Sure. This is a corporate certification that holds companies to higher standards of social and environmental performance that have been built to last through a legal change and requires transparency about how they're both excelling in certain areas and where there are areas for improvement. And so the big innovations here, Dan, are number one, a corporate certification rather than a product or practice certification. Importantly, there are hundreds of magnificent certifications out there that tell you something about a product or a supply chain or a labor practice, all of which are incredibly important. But we thought the next evolution of this marketplace was no longer talking about a good product, but instead talking about a good business. And so we elevated the conversation from the product level or the practice level to a corporate certification evaluating a company's impact on everything they do, their workers, the community, the environment, their consumer set, and of course, their governance practices. So that's one innovation, is that indeed it looks at the whole. The second significant innovation is it also requires a legal change. We talked about that when I was giving that brief description of the certification, that that has to be built to last. And the idea there is to fundamentally shift corporate governance so that companies are accountable to something other than just maximizing shareholder value. And we do that by rewriting corporate governing documents where we embed in the law, in the accountability of these businesses, a commitment to consider the impact of their decisions, not just on their shareholders, but also on all their stakeholders. And so it has real teeth and changes the fiduciary duty of the business. You're essentially putting into the DNA of the business a commitment to maintain impact for all of their stakeholders. So that's point A and point B. You pass the impact assessment that evaluates your higher standards of social and environmental performance. You then change your corporate governing documents to consider all stakeholders. And then the third and final I mentioned is transparency. You got to share your impact report so that your stakeholders know how you're doing.
Okay, so you had this audacious vision. You know, you need the leaders, you know, you need the tools. But the reason we're speaking is that then things started to move. You've made quite a lot of progress. Where are you now with the B Corp landscapes? What are the current challenges you're facing?
The single largest challenge we have right now, Dan, is to scale with integrity. Demand is incredibly strong for this movement. And we need to make sure that we continue to uphold the rigor and the integrity of the overall movement while also building something that's inclusive and welcomes people in. That admittedly is going to be, I think, our challenge for the foreseeable future. Now, backing up as to where we are, we now have about 4,100 certified B corporations. They're in 80 different countries, 150 different industries. And the commonality is they're all using business as a force for good. They're multi-billion dollar businesses down to sole proprietors and focused on every element of impact you can imagine, Dan. And so that's the community of leaders. And remembering kind of our theory of change, by shining a light on them, we create these tools for others to follow. One of the tools is our impact assessment, the B impact assessment. That's the tool we use for certification. But Dan, we've decided to make it a public good and allow anybody to use it just as kind of a do-it-yourself consulting tool to measure, manage, and improve your impact. Embedded are resources and best practice guides and videos. You can set targets. You can get quarterly or annual reports on how you're doing towards those targets. It's completely free. It's totally confidential. And we currently have about 160,000 companies using that tool to be more like a B corporation. The third and final vehicle that we use for scale is around that legal framework. Remember how we were saying that companies that are certified have to rewrite their articles? Well, it turns out that in a lot of jurisdictions around the globe, you can't just rewrite your articles of incorporation because it's against current corporate law. And so we've had to create a new legally recognized corporate form, something called a benefit corporation. And so now in 43 states here in the U.S. and 7 countries, you can register your business as either a traditional corporation, a nonprofit corporation, or a benefit corporation. And that legal framework, again, changes fiduciary duty, right? It makes the company accountable to balancing the value they create for both shareholders and society.
Within about 5 years from when B Lab was founded, the organization made its first effort to pass legislation that would help move towards the system that they'd imagined from the beginning.
Changing the rules has always been part of the vision for the economic systems change. Like if we pull all the way back, Dan, and think about the three different pieces of the certification, higher standards of performance that are built to last through a legal change and then are made transparent. Those are indicative of the three elements that we think are necessary to change the system. One is a set of standards that defines what good enough is and provides a roadmap for companies to improve their impact so that we're measuring things differently, right? That we're no longer defining success exclusively using financial metrics, but now we're incorporating metrics about employee engagement and community involvement and environmental footprint to evaluate what success is in business. So that's one pillar, a set of standards. The next pillar, which relates to the accountability, is the legal framework. Fundamentally, Dan, we don't think we can move from a shareholder economy to a stakeholder economy if you don't have stakeholder governance and you don't have different rules.
Right.
So that's about changing the rules of the game. And then third and finally, transparency. Like if we're not all transparently consuming the impact that our companies that we buy from, work for, and invest in a relative short order, that'll be a problem. We're going to need that transparency so that we can all make better decisions and patronize those businesses that share our values.
So I'm not one to get overly hooked up on definitions, actually, but I think in the world you're in, it's probably pretty important. You've got social enterprise, sustainable business, benefit corporations. What's the distinction between them? Are they useful? And how do you use definitions effectively within the movement you're trying to build?
A great question. And admittedly, it's confusing. And I guess at the highest level, the movement that we're trying to build is a movement that includes for-profit businesses for good. And that could range from social enterprises where they're willing to potentially accept a lower rate of return and or lower financial performance focused on the social impact or environmental impact they're creating, all the way across to sustainable businesses where profitability is still critical, but they're doing it in a sustainable way. And so our tent in our movement is a large one, Dan. And so we embrace everything from the small social enterprises that could be working in sub-Saharan Africa, creating, you know, energy sources for marginalized populations, all the way across to an organization like Danone, you know, the global dairy giant, who has already committed to trying to join this community as a certified B Corporation and has already certified about 40% of their global revenues through their subsidiaries. And so everything in that spectrum we view as business as a force for good, and we welcome into this community as long as they've met those three requirements: higher standards of social and environmental performance that are built to last through an accountable change with transparency.
So, and someone like Danone is, you know, these are not small businesses. These are, I think, 20 billion plus businesses.
That's right.
So there's clearly a critical role that business plays in transforming communities, economic systems. Have you got an example you could share which maybe highlights that critical role in practice?
I have 4,100 of them. You know, where
let's,
to start?
Let's start with one and see how much time we have.
I think many people know the story of Grayston Bakery. Grayston Bakery is a company that bakes brownies and provides the brownies for Ben and Jerry's ice cream. They also have a direct-to-consumer product. Their tagline is, we don't hire people to bake brownies. We bake brownies to hire people. Fundamentally, they have an open hiring practice, Dan, where they don't have an interview process. The next person in line gets the job. And that means they hire chronically underserved populations, whether it be returning citizens or battered women or the homeless. They all find a home at Grayston Bakery. And we've seen that model repeated many, many times over across the globe. We work with a company in Singapore called Janishtam. And Janishtam uses the power of technology to hire people with physical disabilities to train them to do coding and other tasks that they can do remotely that previously were too difficult to incorporate them into the workforce. And they have employees on all five continents. Another example in terms of, you know, how people sell products. Some people might know Natura Cosmetics out of Brazil. Natura makes a beautiful, both organic and natural beauty product. But what is most impactful about them is they've lifted 2.5 million women out of poverty by training them to sell their cosmetics in Brazil. In the last 2 years, that organization has bought The Body Shop and converted The Body Shop into a certified B Corp. And they've just bought last year Avon. And they're in the process of turning Avon into a certified B Corp. Now that I think now is a $10 billion company. And so it's just magnificent when you see how entrepreneurs can use the power of the economic system to create meaningful and lasting impact.
What are the sort of roadblocks and challenges that these businesses are facing generally, but also specific to creating impact?
Dan, the challenges are shifting. And they're shifting because many of the barriers that have existed for decades are falling. Let me try to provide some examples. First is employment. What is really interesting is the first place that people use our intellectual property as a certified B Corp is on their HR listings. They publish that they're a certified B Corp to attract and retain talent. The shift in the labor pool where new entrants are looking for more than just money in their job, they're looking for meaning and purpose in their work, has changed the employment environment dramatically. And so what historically had been a challenge about attracting and retaining the best talent is now, frankly, an asset for sustainable and social businesses. Historically, I would point to capital, right? We've had a massive need for capital coming to social and sustainable businesses. That too is changing, where the world of sustainable investment and impact investing is the fastest growing component of the capital marketplace. Now, $1 in $4 in the United States, professionally managed, is invested in some form of sustainable business. That is a massive shift in the last 15 years. A third challenge historically has been overcoming supply chain issues that have been predominantly driven by scale. Well, it turns out that large organizations more and more are now looking to essentially improve their supply chains and find either more sustainable or green supply chains, lending opportunities for the sustainable businesses and social enterprises. Don't get me wrong, all three of those barriers still exist, but I would tell you they're massively different than they were 15 years ago. That the combination of growing awareness about sustainable business coupled with investment capital and a changing labor market has changed the opportunities for social and sustainable business.
Changed, and it sounds like actually quite significantly reduced them.
Totally.
So would it be fair to say that the challenges now for businesses creating impact are quite similar to those for ones that are not creating impact? Or in fact, maybe it's created more problems if you're not creating impact in the world.
I think in some cases, specifically around attracting talent, if you're not authentically engaging with the sustainability movement, you're going to have difficulty holding on to your workforce.
Yeah.
That I think the data is overwhelming on that, Dan. And the last data point that I didn't bring up is around consumers. You know, people are buying products that match their values to a greater extent than ever before. 81% of global consumers now say they expect companies to balance social interests with business interests. That shift from when we began this work 15 years ago is massive. It's massive. So consumers, investors, workers, policymakers are indeed removing some of these barriers. And I do think the one place where our sustainable community has a leg up is around attracting and retaining talent. It's really clear.
If businesses can do so much good or have the potential to change a system, do you think there's still a place for nonprofits and philanthropy?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we all should recognize there are places where a market-driven economy cannot go, and that those needs must be filled by the nonprofit sector. And so using for-profit entities to address these challenges has some limitations, in that there are certain places that are purely about charitable efforts and require innovative and effective nonprofits. But I would say, Dan, that the lines continue to blur.
Yeah.
As this marketplace develops, what began as really a clear delineation between a for-profit and nonprofit, we now have nonprofits that have for-profit subsidiaries and robust earned incomes where they're no longer required to raise philanthropy to continue to deliver their work. And we also have for-profits who are announcing to the world that they're not looking to maximize shareholder value. They're not looking to maximize returns, and they're specifically willing to take a return that is not going to be market-based in order to deliver their impact. And so the space is beautifully gray. And I think what people are learning is that there is power in both models, and how do we utilize the best of both to drive impact?
Do you see nonprofits and get frustrated that they're taking philanthropy to do what could be done by a business or should be done with a business model that would then allow it to scale up?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. At the end of the day, my personal ethos is we should be structurally agnostic. If you have an incredibly successful and efficient delivery vehicle of impact through a nonprofit and they're using philanthropy to drive that impact, God bless, that's fantastic. Similarly, if we have an incredibly effective for-profit that's delivered a for-profit model that's creating also scalable impact, that's equally important. The only time that I get frustrated is if either of those forms are doing it inefficiently. And so ultimately, we all should be accountable to be good stewards of the capital we receive. And I would say, Dan, like, importantly, I run a nonprofit. B-Lab is a nonprofit, right? And I think we all need to be accountable to measuring our impact and making sure we're being good stewards, efficient stewards of the capital we receive, whether it be earned income or investment or philanthropy. I hope the aspiration of every nonprofit is to work themselves out of a job. That is true for B-Lab as well. Like, ultimately, Dan, when we get to a place where all companies are required to consider something other than maximizing the return to shareholders, but creating real value for all of their stakeholders legally, when we get to a point where there are true metrics that are transparent, that report a different type of success for business, where we're looking at employee engagement and community involvement and environmental footprint, along with financial profitability, as our definition of success, I'm excited for B-Lab to say our work here is done and for us to go do something else. Do I think that's happening anytime soon? I don't, but we're on the road. We're making progress, and I'm optimistic.
In March 2020, Bart and the team were worried about how the pandemic would impact on the movement and community that B-Lab had built over the years. He thought a lot of businesses would go under due to economic hardship, and it would take years to rebuild. But in the last 18 months, B-Lab saw 4,000 companies apply for B Corp certification and 70,000 companies register and use the B Impact Assessment tool. Given that in the first 15 years of B-Lab, 160,000 companies had used the tool, 70,000 shows a serious growth curve. This resilience is testament to the movement that B-Lab is building, and I think bodes very well for the future. If you want to find out more about B-Lab and how you can join other leaders who are using their business as a force for good, you can visit bcorporation.net. That's it from us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe or follow our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And while you're there, I'd appreciate it if you could rate us and give us a review. And if you love Mission to Scale, I hope you recommend our show to a friend or colleague. Thank you so much for joining, and I'll catch you all in the next episode. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter.